Thank you very much, Dr. Poulter. I'm going to present some work today that was done by Shadi Alshara, who is now a PhD student at NC State University. So as you can see from the title, that this represents a little change of content, because there was supposed to be a section on biofuel, but that fell through, so the paper was placed here. So the title is, we wanted to look at continuous ethanol production or bioethanol production on a year-round basis, using basically multiple feedstocks. As you can see there, that we know the story quite well, is that, you know, the high price of fuel from fossil fuels is spurring additional work into alternative sources of fuel. And although I put that point four there, you know, recently oil prices have come down to maybe $48, $50 a barrel, and the gas prices have fallen since. And for bioethanol work, the threshold is about $1.75 per gallon. And a couple of weeks ago, I was paying $1.99 a gallon for my gas. I'm in South Central Alabama, the Southern United States. But since Harvey and Irma, I paid as much as $2.52 before I left. So that's a problem we have. How can we try to reduce that? Now, the U.S., as it says, they produce about 3% of the known oil, has about 3% of the known oil reserves, but we use about 25%, of the global production. And about 60 to 80% of that 25% goes for transportation fuel. So it's critical. I see Brazil and so on, they are doing some work there. And the thing with the biofuels is that ethanol, it's already being used as part of the an additive, and so it is the most viable choice we have now that goes along with our current infrastructure. So the crops that we work with are sweet potato, sweet sorghum, and sugarcane, and there's a fair amount of work that has been done looking at those three crops individually. But the idea we had is, because these crops in the South are complementary of each other, sweet sorghum planted in April, May, and harvested before sugarcane does in October. And then sweet potato, you can harvest as late as November in our part of the country. And so some of the work that we have done, we have used it for biofuel, use it as a fresh product. We have also used it after short storage, that is after curing and a short storage. And then we have also processed it into a slurry, where it can be stored for a little while, you know, assuming you suppose you have a backup in your little plant and so on. So we've looked at some of those activities. So the goal was then to develop or to look at an integrative process through the use of a pilot plant supplied by multiple feedstocks on a year-round basis. And we want to do that by estimating the potential ethanol production from the three species there, and to determine the feasibility of this continuous production using these multiple feedstocks. So from this slide, and by the way, we are talking mainly about sugar, starch sugar crops, not cellulosic. Even though in the South we have an abundance of woody material for the cellulosic, but in terms of the crops here, you can see the starch, see the chain, and the tubers. So even though sweet potatoes aren't there, which is a root crop, which would be down here with sugar beets, sweet potatoes are involved. Then you have the sugar crops here, which in the grasses, which include sugarcane and sweet sorghum that we looked at. So the idea then is, you know, the security of feedstocks, a steady supply of these feedstocks, so you don't have to shut your plant down. And you know, the availability of these feedstocks is seasonal. So production then from sugarcane coupled with other sugar-containing feedstocks, this may provide an opportunity to expand the operation year-round. So, you know, these are some of the few points about sweet sorghum, its adaptability, and the fact that it's a low fertilizer user, and it is a good a candidate for the short-term production. Of course, it has a brick sucrose content anywhere from about 16 to 23%. Then sugarcane, of course, we are in south central Alabama, and it does get cold there. So these are some of the sugarcane I'm growing there. And normally they begin to spring from Ratoon in about March, 15th of March, late March, depending on what the temperature, how cool the spring is. And then we harvest as close as possible to the first frost, you know, killing frost that will impact them. All right, so some work, you know, Ziska did some pioneering work, which he showed that the importance. We compare work in Alabama and Maryland and showed that how important sweet potato is in comparison to corn, which is the main feedstock now to produce ethanol. Rogers also showed similar response where he compared these starch crops and sweet potato produce a lot more carbohydrate for that, as well as yield, as well as the carbohydrate production. So it represents a good candidate. And here we are talking about what I call industrial sweet potatoes, as opposed to the normal table types that are consumed in the United States. But we have a sweet potato breeding program, and these are accessions that we are looking at. And they are selected based on high starch, high dry matter content, as well as the amylose-amylopectin ratio as it relates to production for ethanol. And so Nia Wong did some work and where we evaluated these and see we got as high at that time of about 66 grams per liter of ethanol from those sweet potato. So in terms of methodology now, as we say, we had five species of sweet sorghum we obtained from a seed supplier in Kentucky. Then these and the three varieties of sugarcane, which we don't know what they are. I obtained these cuttings, nodal cuttings, from one of my colleagues up the road at Auburn University. But he wasn't sure what they were as well, so we just call them TU white and so on, purple, and TU green, TU blue. And then, of course, we use J666, which is a cream flesh, and TU purple. Cultivars of sweet potato. This is a little busy, but the shorter just shows the schematic. And we use essentially the method of Hussein and Mellers in 89, where we either, for sweet potatoes, of course, you know, we have to go through the hydrolysis step, but for the other two, we just went straight to fermentation. So they were all treated outside of this hydrolysis step. They were all treated pretty much the same way, provided the same chemicals and so on before autoclaving, for the benchtop, and ultimately fermentation. So this is a little benchtop system we use. It's a little fractional distiller, and this represents samples after hydrolysis and so on. That's for the lab scale. And then for the pilot scale, I tell folks, using a moonshine still, you know. But basically, that's what we had. But this is a 50-gallon revenue system that has the different, you know, the fermentation vat, the holding vat, and the cooling vat. And it is boiled in here. Of course, the temperature thermometer up here, we set it at about 78 degrees where the ethanol will come off. So that's the system we use. Of course, this is a little bit of what it looks like in our little biofuel plant. So in terms of the results now, looking at the benchtop, These are the five varieties, but you see the highest brix content that we got here. And remember, we have a shortish growing season, the percent dry matter, and of course, the juice extractability here, we are getting roughly about 52% based on the juice processor that we use. And of course, the sugar cane, we have about 19% as the highest brix content, because remember, we get only about 5 to 6 months of growth and the percent dry matter, but we have a higher juice extractability. Sweet potatoes there, you see we are averaging roughly about 36% dry matter, so that's what we are looking for. In terms of the different sugars now that these crops contain, you see that it is largely sucrose, except for there should be MS81-E, which most of its sugars were glucose and fructose there. For the sugarcane, of course, you know sucrose is the main sugar in there. And then you see the ethanol that we obtain in terms, these are just grams per liter from the benchtop level. So here now, when we look at the before and after fermentation, we see down here, this is what I wanted to point out, where we combined the three feedstocks in one, but we're not sure what is happening here, but you see when you look at the sucrose content before, then after fermentation, you had very little of the sugar was broken down. So I'm not sure what happens there when we combine. But you see these for both when you combine them, even though you did get about 80 grams or so per liter of ethanol, which I suppose came mainly from the glucose here, that were, as well as the fructose that was there. And then when you look now at the pilot scale, this is the weight of, you know, of the feedstock that we use, the juice extraction and so on. And we see that the ethanol recovery was similar to that at the lab scale. So we know that both of those sort of go together. And then finally, when we looked at the proof, because it has to be in excess of an 190 or above for... 2 minutes, okay. 190 or above, this is the last, well, not quite the last, but it shows that the proof declines much faster for sweet potato as time increases, as we pass it through that 50-gallon still. But sugarcane and sweet sorghum maintain the purity of the proof a little bit longer than sweet potato ethanol. And so this is what Shadi was just showing there, the proof level they're using our instruments, 190 proof. Some of the challenges we found was mainly in terms of the juice extraction process. It's really laborious. This is the best we could find because there's no way in the United States we can get, this is just a little sugarcane juice, so it's really laborious. And it's not suitable for thick stalks and so on. Then the other problem we ran into was fully hydrolyzing the mash from the sweet potato and getting it through the system. So those we are trying to get larger equipment. So in conclusion then, all feedstocks generally had high sugar content, and the ethanol recovered was in the order here, sorghum greater than sugarcane, greater than sweet potato. And the proof at pilot scale was in the range of ethanol for the fuel grade. So I'll stop there. Thank you.